It's time for another exciting edition of the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle. Stay tuned as we discuss local and national sports from Southeast Missouri and beyond. And now, without further ado, let's get on with the show. And welcome to another exciting edition of the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle. I'm Mike Buehler.
I'm Mark Sanders.
And this is Kyle Roberts.
And we have got another exciting show today. But as usual, we are going to start off by talking about the National Football League. And we got quite a few games this week. And Mark, I'm going to let you lead off.
Yeah, if you're letting me lead off, we're going to talk about the Vikings.
And first thing
we're going to do is look back at that signature win over the Atlanta Falcons. And their quarterback, the former Vikings leader, Kirk Cousins. And, you know, Kirk was exactly what we expected him to be. He looked good in the first quarter, and then his performance declined after that. But let's not talk about Kirk Cousins anymore. Let's talk about Sam Darnold and the fact that he is the offensive player of the week for last week, and he's currently on a streak since a two-game streak against Indianapolis and Jacksonville, in which he had zero touchdowns and three interceptions in that one game against Jacksonville, a total of five interceptions. And he went zero touchdowns, five picks in two games, and people were talking about, oh, he's turning back into a pumpkin. What are we going to do now? We don't have anyone on the bench. And since that time, he has come out in the last three games, eight touchdowns, zero picks, and is just lighting it up. And the thing that I loved about that game against Atlanta, not only that it was a home game, but you finally saw all of the pieces of the Vikings offense click together. With one exception, TJ Hockenson, their all-pro tight end, wasn't that involved. He caught a few catches, but, I mean, that is the thing about this Vikings offense. Yes, JJ and Free Three, by the way, Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison, for those of you not fluent in Viking speak, they had monster days. It was the first Vikings receiver tandem to amass more than 100 yards and more than at least two touchdowns apiece in the history of the Vikings franchise. I mean, not even Chris Carter and Randy Moss were able to put together the kind of numbers that Jefferson and Addison did. And the rest of the league should really be scared, because the Vikings have a tough defense. If you look back at their season, it's only in their two losses that they've given up more than 20, 21 points a game. And so the defense is formidable. But once this offense starts clicking on all cylinders, and I'm really hopeful that last week's game was a sign of the times, that they've put all these pieces together. Everyone's been working with Darnold enough they can put all these pieces together and just build this juggernaut offense for the rest of the season leading into the playoffs. And again, if they can duplicate this effort at home on Monday night against the Bears, they're going to be wearing their Winter Warriors uniforms, all white with white helmets. If you haven't seen these uniforms yet, go on the internet and check it out. They are sharp. They are razor sharp, I'm telling you.
Cool deal. And we will see if come Monday night, if the Bears are who we thought they were.
Well, the Bears are in utter disarray right now. They have no coaching staff. I mean, their head coach a month ago was an offensive assistant. So he got promoted to offensive coordinator about 3 weeks ago. And then going into last week, he was all of a sudden the head coach. You can't decimate a coaching staff like that in the middle of the season. I don't think that Caleb Williams has anyone coaching him up right now. And it doesn't matter how talented you are in the college game. You need to be coached in the NFL. And I think Kevin O'Connell's success with Sam Darnold just demonstrates how important it is to have the right coaching staff, and I mean an entire staff, to help develop a successful quarterback in the NFL.
Indeed. And before we dive into the rest of the NFL, we are now going to talk about my favorite team, the team that formerly known as the Tennessee Titans, but after that disaster against the Jacksonville Jaguars last Sunday, I am now referring to them as the Tennessee Little People.
Mike, I'm really sorry to say this to you, but Tennessee is irrelevant in the NFL this season. I mean, really, they're just a win on other people's schedule, and there's nothing for the fans in Nashville to look forward to except perhaps the NFL draft.
That's about the truth. We are playing the Bengals Sunday, and the Bengals are not very good, but the Bengals are fresh off beating the Dallas Cowboys, and they have a great quarterback in Joe Burrow. And after that disaster last Sunday against the Jaguars, I will be very surprised if my guys win another game this year. We are not called the little people for nothing.
I'm going to engage in some reckless speculation here. Now, all of the experts are predicting that Detroit's offensive coordinator, Ben Johnson, who's a big part of the reason why Detroit has been successful, that he's probably not going to wait one more year to get the head coaching job that is waiting for him, especially if Detroit wins the Super Bowl. Now, most people who have chimed in on this have said, well, he's likely to go to Chicago, you know, because they've got Caleb Williams and he could help develop Caleb Williams. And I think that is absolutely the wrong move for him because Chicago's ownership and management are so dysfunctional. You just can't win in Chicago. I mean, they're like the Jets. They're just a completely dysfunctional organization from top to bottom. But consider this, and Kyle, weigh in on this. Cincinnati is really underachieving this season. And what if Cincinnati cashiers Zach Taylor and hires Ben Johnson to be Joe Burrow's head coach?
Oh, wow.
That had never crossed my mind, Mark. I swear that never crossed my mind because I would have thought Ben Johnson would have just married Dan Campbell at this point. Those two are peanut butter and jelly. Zach Taylor is a product of Sean McVay, but he ain't no Sean McVay. Ben Johnson has done an immaculate job with that Lions offense, and the thing is, the Bengals' offense is not the issue. They have the NFL's number one rated quarterback in terms of touchdown passes, yards, and QBR. Jamar Chase leads the NFL in touchdown catches and yards. Trey Hendrickson leads the NFL in sacks. That defense is a nightmare. But Ben Johnson could bring in a slice of that Detroit culture that has worked so wonderfully there and change some things in Cincinnati. I wouldn't be opposed to it, frankly, because even with the Bengals' record, they still give the sense of a threat. Like, they should be better.
You know, I'm going to look back to the Vikings here. You know, KOC's first year, he did a terrific job in leading a team to an unlikely 13-4 season. But their defense was completely suspect the entire season, and that's what let them down in their first round loss to the Giants. So then he brings in Brian Flores. In the past 2 years, the defense has really been on the upswing. So, you know, whether it's Zach Taylor staying in Cincinnati or whether it's someone new like Ben Johnson, they're going to need to get a solid name at defensive coordinator. And who is available? The former head coach of the New York Jets, Robert Saleh, who is one of the great young minds in defense. In fact, the Jets' defense has never been the problem. It's the fact that their offense stinks and they don't have a quarterback who's less than 87 years old.
Facts. Robert Saleh should be employed right now. I don't understand.
There's been a lot of talk in Minnesota that should B-Flo get hired as a head coach next year, that his logical successor, if he was available, would be Robert Saleh.
Yeah, I don't understand why he doesn't have a job right now. Back to the Bears, you're absolutely right. If Ben Johnson were to go to the Bears, he would just be the next coach that fails because of the ownership of the McCaskies. This is the same franchise that fired Lovie Smith after going 10-6. Thinking the grass was greener on the other side.
Well, that's what always happens when ownership thinks that it knows more than football professionals. Jerry Jones. Sorry about that. Excuse me, folks.
Dungeon Master.
Would you like to clarify what I thought I just heard, sir?
Yeah, Jerry Jones needs to retire. In fact, all owners of football teams need to do what really smart businessmen do, which is to hire experts to run their companies and make them money and lead them to the top. You look
at. Remember, Jerry needs all the credit, and he needs you to know all those Super Bowl teams were all him. Jimmy Johnson just cooked the food.
Well, it's
Jerry bought the groceries.
It's ridiculous. Now, I'm never one to praise Enos Kroenke.
The robber baron
who stole St. Louis's team and ran them back out to Los Angeles. But this is undeniable. He has a brilliant general manager in Les Snead and one of the top three head coaches. Look at what the Rams did last week to the Bills.
Can I talk about my football team for a moment, please? Thank you.
That was unbelievable. Puka Nacua is a cyborg sent from the future to destroy America. He's not human.
Thank you, BYU. I had never heard of Puka Nacua when we drafted him, but I trusted Sean McVay because two words, Cooper Kupp.
Yeah.
Because we had a stretch of eight straight drafts without a first round draft pick, and it just did without a first, and it didn't matter. He would find a gym and he would coach them up, and I think that's our X factor is Sean McVay. Even if we are currently as a roster rebuilding and retooling, I mean, there's no replacing Aaron Donald, but we've done a solid job there.
Right.
But Puka Nacua was a freak of nature. I went to bed that Sunday resigned to the fact that I thought we were going to lose to Buffalo because the Bills are on a heater, and I wake up and I literally screamed, "We did what?" Like Al Michaels in 2000 on a Monday night in Green Bay.
Yeah, I mean the Bills defense was. The Bills' defense could not do anything to stop Stafford and the Rams' receivers. It was really something. And, you know, the Rams aren't in the playoffs yet, but there's still four more games, and I definitely do not want to face the Rams at any point in the playoffs with that offensive proficiency that they have. Now, for purely selfish reasons, I hope that the Rams lose tonight in the Thursday night game. They're visiting San Francisco. Historically, the Niners have owned the Rams, regardless of their individual records, and they are.
I don't need to be reminded of that.
And they are playing in Santa Clara. I believe that's where Levi's Stadium is located. But anyway, yeah, they're playing in Frisco tonight, and if the 49ers can pull off the win, or if, hate to root for Green Bay 2 weeks in a row, but if Green Bay can beat Seattle, then the Vikings will have already clinched their playoff spot before Monday night even rolls around.
Not bad. Mark, who else have we got playing this week?
Well, we've got Kansas City going to Cleveland so that they can look terrible against the 3-10 Browns.
The dog pound.
For 3 quarters and 12 minutes, but they'll keep it close enough so that when there's about 3 minutes left, Pat Mahomes will matriculate the ball down the field. He'll hit a fourth down pass to a wide open Travis Kelce, and then some kicker who they recruited from an Ecuadorian soccer team will come and connect with a 35-yard field goal to give them a 1 or 2 point lead. I'm telling you, anyone who is betting on the Chiefs to beat a point spread is just begging to lose their money. It's like that meme from Futurama, you know, shut up and take my money. Don't bet that spread, folks.
The vampire will live again.
Oh, good Lord. You know, part of me wonders, Kyle, Mike, is Kansas City just playing rope-a-dope? I mean, are they intentionally tanking these games to the end just to see how hard they can make? I mean, is this just practice for winning close games in the playoffs for them?
It wouldn't surprise me.
But I go by the eye test. I don't go by your record all the time. Now, this is not a 12-1, a genuine 12-1 football team. Kansas City should be 8-5 right now, quite frankly. But that games like this make you harden for the postseason. Say what you will about how they've won games, but you figure out ways. Similar to what I said about the Rams with their X factor being Sean McVay, no matter the deficiencies Kansas City has on offense this year, and there have been a lot of them due to performance and injury, their X factor is Spags and Andy Reid, period.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, now they have a Y factor because now that the Eras Tour has concluded, last weekend, Taylor Swift is free to attend all of the rest of their games. And you know that the Chiefs have never lost at Arrowhead when Tay-Tay's in attendance.
that is fair, but if there's one counter to that, if there's one counter to Miss Swift, I will say this. It is the endless roller coaster known as the Jameis Winston experience. Y'all watch and see what happens Sunday. That man is gonna play, is gonna turn into good Jameis and go for 400 yards and 4 touchdowns and not turn the ball over once.
YOLO.
Yeah, I mean he is the living embodiment of YOLO in a football player. It's definitely entertaining, I'll tell you what. And if you're a Browns fan, that's really all you can hope for at this point of the season is entertaining. Totally. Entertaining. Speaking of entertaining, Buffalo is traveling to Detroit to take on. Yes.
I'm sorry, that's called a Super Bowl preview.
Yes, it very much looks like a Super Bowl preview, and I need the Bills to beat the Lions. The Lions will never be more beatable than they are this weekend. It doesn't matter that it's at home. Their defense is practically the entire starting defense is on IR. You know, it's like they've got third stringers and practice squad players staffing on the defense. So this should be a time for Buffalo to feast. However, because God hates the Vikings, I figure Detroit will probably win by 6 because we need Detroit to lose another game so that we'll have a chance. Of course, the Vikings still have to sweep their remaining games. But, again, anything is possible, and it would certainly be better for them to have that number one seed and the bye and home field as opposed to having potentially a 14-3 record and having to go on the road against a team that's barely over 500 in the wild card round.
That is so absurd.
Yeah, it really is. One of the things we're going to talk about once the playoffs start is if there's a better way to seed teams, some way to still reward teams for winning their division, but without punishing the outstanding divisions in football like the AFC North, AFC West, and NFC North. My game of the week is going to be Pittsburgh at Philadelphia. We'll see. Are the Eagles for real? Are the Steelers for real? This will be a cross-state grudge match between two really fierce teams with fiercely loyal fan bases. It is going to be ugly inside that stadium because that game is in Philly, but we all know that Pittsburgh's fans travel everywhere.
That they do, and I don't know if there's a more insufferable version of a football fan than a drunk yinzer.
I'll give you one. Cheeseheads. Green Bay Packer fans are the most insufferable fans in football, and they will be traveling to the land of the insufferable fan, the 12th Man Legion of Seattle, and that's the Sunday night football game. And if the Rams win tonight, then Green Bay can still send the Vikings to the playoffs by a win over the Sea Chickens.
I'd be okay with that, provided that Seattle loses, because then that keeps us alive for potentially winning the NFC West, and that's not a sentence I thought I would say at all this year.
Well, that's why playoffs are not put Minnesota's fate in their own hands. Although, man, I don't want to travel to Seattle. I don't want to travel anywhere. I want to win the North and stay at home. That's what I want.
There you go. And that's our talk about the NFL. We are going to switch gears in just a minute and talk a little bit of local sports with Popper Bluff Mules, the Three Rivers Raiders, and a little bit more. But I also want to tell you right now that the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle is presented to you by Royal Retros. They're the ones who make the throwback jerseys that I love to wear. I'm wearing one of their jerseys right now. And if you order from them and use the code SPORTSDESK, all one word, you can get some money back off your order from them. So go to RoyalRetros.com and get your awesome throwback jersey.
Terrific. All right, looking around the high school basketball over the past week or so, I had a chance to watch the Poplar Bluff Mules boys team play a couple of different games. They're playing really good defense to start the season, but unfortunately their offense is still inconsistent. They really need to work on their high percentage shots. They're missing a lot of layups. They're missing a lot of short jumpers. They're occasionally getting threes to drop from the perimeter, but again, it's just inconsistent, and they're just not going to be able to compete in Southeast Missouri until they get their offense firing on all cylinders. And Coach Will Durden is aware of this, and you know, he's working with the team, and he's hopeful that as the season progresses and he has more time and they get more experience together on the court, that the chemistry will improve and that their scoring will improve. But they've got a really good foundation with that defense.
Good deal, yeah. And the Mules are playing for the consolation title at the CMO Conference Tournament tomorrow night. They are playing New Madrid County Central. That should be a good game. That's going to be on, I think it comes at 5:30 tomorrow evening. And the Lady Mules are in the midst of a pretty good stretch. They went 3-1. At their own CMO Conference Tournament last week. They are 4-2 on the season, have a pretty good chance to go to 5-2 tonight when they take on Scott County Central. Not bad for a team that only won 7 games last year.
No, they're doing really, really well this season, and it's going to be a tough matchup for the boys, though, going up against New Madrid County Central. They are back-to-back repeating state champs from the past 2 years, so they're going to be tough.
That is true, Mark, and you got to see the Greenville Bears and the Donovan Dons Tuesday night. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, Greenville has, even though they lost a few players to graduation, they're still great shooters. I mean, it's just, that's the thing that impresses you most about Greenville. They started off that game against Donovan with 3 or 4 three-point shots, and, I mean, there was no rattling around the rim. I mean, these were net swishers. So they started off accurate. They don't miss layups. They're patient. They take their time working the ball inside. And it just seems like, you know, you can play tough defense against them. And Donovan did, especially in the third quarter. They came out just flying around on defense, full court press with double and triple teams. And they rattled Greenville and got back into the game. But, you know, Greenville kept their composure. They eventually started working that ball in and getting open shots, and Donovan was just, you know, not able to get over that hump. But I can tell you, at 2-2, Donovan already looks better early on in the season than they did last year. I think that Hunter Dilbeck, now full-time coach rather than interim coach, is doing a really good job of bringing the Donovan boys together. We're going to talk about Donovan. We got to talk about the Donettes. They're already 4-0 on the season. They're averaging more than 64 points on offense and giving up just a little bit more than 36 points on defense. Their smallest margin of victory so far this season has been 15 points.
Oh, wow. And I actually saw the Donettes play Saturday evening. They played Neelyville for the championship of the inaugural River City Classic in Donovan. And I got to tell you, the Donettes looked good. They beat a pretty solid Neelyville team that was a defending Class 2 district champ and had back at least two very good pieces from that team. And frankly, the Donettes dominated them from tip to buzzer.
And this is what's really scary about the Donettes. They really only lost one starter, Kinsey Reedus, to graduation. The rest of their starters are still playing. They've got two seniors in the starting line, believe in the starting lineup, but the rest are juniors and sophomores. So, I mean, that is a program that is going to be good for years. I was looking ahead at their schedule today, and, of course, they've got their district nemesis, Notre Dame of Cape Girardeau, coming up, I believe, on January 20th. I don't have the stats in front of me, so I'm going on memory. Don't hold me on that. But it's somewhere in January. And they're very likely to be undefeated going into that game against Notre Dame. And then about a month or so later, they have to take on Jackson. And Jackson is also undefeated. The Jackson girls are already 6-0 on the season. So I'm sure, even though they're in different classes, I'm sure that's going to be a big matchup when that comes around. And again, we might be looking at two undefeated teams coming together in the late winter this year.
Agreed. And I'm going to talk a little bit about Three Rivers Raiders and Lady Raiders. The men's basketball team has hit its first slump of the season. They struggled to get a win last Wednesday over Shawnee, you know, a team that was a 500 team after that game. They lost a rematch at John A. Logan on Saturday and then got beat on a buzzer beater second time this year by Southwestern Illinois the next evening in St. Louis. You know, a game that, you know, was a little bit of an upset, to be honest. And I've had a couple of fans that have, you know, kind of gotten stressed out. It's like, this is bringing back bad memories of the last few years where we struggled the second half of the season. And I've said, right now, I think one of our biggest problems, we are missing two players that one has started every game he's played. The other has started the majority of the games that he's played. And I think it's had an impact, especially when you consider that we've had three of our five losses this year have either been one possession losses or an overtime. And one player in a situation like that can make all the difference in the world between being, you know, 10-5 and 12-3 or 13-2.
You know, there are ebbs and flows in any basketball season. We need to remember that Coach Robert Kirby is in his first season with the Raiders. And even though they've gotten off to a great start, you know, anytime you have a new coach come in, especially in a 2-year college, you know, you have a very short amount of time to build that chemistry and build that momentum. So I would rather look to our early success and say that we'll be able to replicate that as the season goes along. And it's difficult to play at the end of a semester and through Christmas break. You know, life just doesn't lend itself well to collegiate sports, and we're going to talk about that also in the timing of the upcoming college football playoff and bowl games as well. But I just think fans need to be patient, let Coach Kirby continue to implement his system and wait for things to improve. It's a long season, and there's always ups and downs.
Mark, I agree 100%. The Raiders actually close out the 2024 portion of their schedule tomorrow night against a very tough Jones College team. They're out of Mississippi. They are the number 12 team in the country, so that's going to be a tough one. But after that, we've got 4 weeks to rest up and get healthy before we dive into the region part of the season, which is the absolute meat of our schedule. So I still feel pretty good. And as for the Lady Raiders, they got a big win at Johnny Logan last Saturday, and they are headed to the heart of Crimson Tide country this weekend to play Shelton State on Saturday and Pearl River on Sunday. Those are two nationally ranked teams. We beat Shelton State here last month, but this is going to be at their place, and they are in Tuscaloosa right alongside the Alabama Crimson Tide. And it's going to be a little bit more of a challenge. And then the Lady Raiders get about 3 weeks to rest up and get ready for the second half of the season. So both teams are closing out 2024 with some very tough competition, but that's good because tough competition makes you better.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And we've talked about this on past shows that Lady Raiders head coach Alex Wiggs intentionally put together a tough schedule. He wants his squad to be battle tested when we come to the end of the season and playoffs. Their goal, it's national championship or bust. And so, you know, you have to play the best and beat the best to be the best. And
absolutely.
All right. Well, we've been teasing it since last week. It is college football playoff time. I'm going to give a real quick breakdown of the brackets in the college football playoff. The biggest news, of course, is that Alabama did not sneak in with their three terrible losses on the season. The brackets are interesting. I don't know if I'm a fan of the automatic top seeds and buys to conference winners, especially since football conferences and college are so bizarre a world these days. But here's how ESPN has them listed. Number 12, Clemson, taking on number 5, Texas. Texas is going to win that game by 4 or 5 touchdowns. And then they're going to go on to stomp all over Arizona State, who is the 4th seed with bye. That is a mismatch bracket. Texas is winning both of those games. I think the best matchup in the first round is number 9 Tennessee, an SEC team, taking on Ohio State.
Now, the horseshoe.
Yeah, I always like, well, and that's the thing. That's the thing. Ohio State definitely has a home field advantage. I think Tennessee should win that game. I really do. I think the SEC is just better than the Big Ten, the 2017 Big Ten. And then the winner of that game will take on number 1 ranked Oregon, who's going to boat race either one of those teams. SMU, despite falling off the edge of the earth at the end of the season, still gets the 11 seed. They take on the bizarrely high-ranked Penn State Nittany Lions. How in the world, Kyle, is Penn State ranked in the top 10? They don't play anybody. They play – it's a ridiculous, stupid, weak Big Ten schedule. Oh, great, they went 10-1 or 9-2 in the Big Ten. The Big Ten only has three good teams in it. Explain this to me, please.
Basically, they got the easy end of the stick, and I looked at now for a reference. I looked at Ohio State and Michigan's schedules next year. Both teams got off easy. Neither team plays Oregon. Neither team plays Indiana next year. So Penn State got one of those. Basically,
yeah.
Because they did not have to go play Oregon. They did not have to go play Indiana. They had the game at home against Ohio State. James Franklin, I love James Franklin, but he doesn't win games that matter.
Yeah. I mean, that's just the thing. It's like Penn State is always ranked highly, and they always get in the playoffs, and then they always just fall flat on their face. You know, if they score more than 10 points against Southern Methodist, I'll be shocked. And I will be a Mustangs fan. I can't stand Penn State in any venue in any sport. I always root against the blue and white.
I'm a lover of a whiteout, but at number one, I would have preferred this be a night game, a whiteout, and in snow, but we all can't get what we want. But just because of the irony that this is the 35th anniversary since the end of the death penalty for SMU, for them to be back in a postseason contention like this,
yeah,
I just think that's it.
Yeah. Unfortunately for either one of those teams, they get to go on and play number 3 Boise State. So whoever it is, they're going to get to stand with their hands on their hips in the field and watch Ashton Jeanty run into the end zone over and over and over again.
What a stud.
I love Boise State. I'll tell you, I am so glad to see them in the top four. And I don't have any other rooting interest in the playoffs, so I'm rooting for the Bluefield Warriors to win it all.
I'm more upset that we didn't get a first-round game at Boise to make one of these blue bloods. You have to go there in December.
That would have been fun.
And speaking of blue bloods, Notre Dame is hosting Indiana in a matchup of a 10-7 seed, and there's nothing better than an in-state college grudge match, unless it's a border state grudge match like Mizzou's amazing victory over number 1 Kansas in basketball. We just had to throw that in.
That's right.
But we've got Indiana going up against Notre Dame and then going on to play number 2 Georgia. And I don't know, just looking at the teams on paper, I think it looks fairly inevitable that we're going to have an Oregon-Georgia national championship. And I mean, that's probably the way it should be, but at the same time, if you just look at, well, number 1 played number 2, wasn't that what we had when the AP got to choose the 2 games to play in the bowl championship series, the old BCS? It always ended up
the good old BCS.
Yeah, number 1 playing number 2. I don't know how to fix this. I don't know how to fix it so that we don't get number 1, number 2. But this is at least better than having a bunch of people who are completely unseen and unknown just decide who gets to play the game. At least they have to win the games on the field to get to the final championship.
It's a case of don't look at the man behind the curtain. But with the 12-team playoff and the format we have, it is much better than what we had. And my fear, if we expand to what the FCS Division II and Division III do, is that all it does is welcome in more blue bloods and creates a bigger gap of haves to have-nots. And we just, to me, college sports is, that's not what it's about. It is about the Indianas. Indiana is the losingest program among all power conference football programs ever. They have 714 losses of all time, more than any power conference program. The fact that they're getting to play at Notre Dame, which, by the way, those two schools might be in the same state. They haven't played each other in football, I think, since 1991.
Wow, that's amazing.
They've only had Notre Dame is 23-5-1 all time against Indiana. Their in-state rival is Purdue, but let's not even speak about how garbage they are.
You know, I am an advocate of further expansion. I would prefer to see a 16 team playoff with no buys, but I think the only way that you can make that where you don't have, you know, four or five SEC and four or five Big Ten teams in there is if
all the conferences.
Yes, if you realigned the conferences somehow, and that's something I'm going to talk about in a future episode. I'm doing a little bit of work on that. And, you know, it's sort of like, you know, what do you think life will be like when humans live on Mars? It's one of those speculative things that will probably never happen in our lifetime. But we also never thought that we'd see a 12-team college playoff. But I think conference realignment would be absolutely necessary. And, of course, there's a financial factor in that you have to take into consideration. But I really mourn the loss of the Pac-12 and those regional rivalries. I did not think it was a good thing to see all of these West Coast teams playing in the Midwest and the Big Ten. I don't like it, and we need to find a way to go back to regional rivalries in a way where there's enough money in this system to go around and make everyone competitive.
The main issue was because it all comes down to network deals, and the Pac-12 network just wasn't driving revenue the way the Big Ten network and the ACC and the SEC / Longhorn network have. And I understand that, but being very traditional like you, Mark, it's the fact that knowing that we don't get to see Cal play USC and, you know, Washington playing, you know, Oregon State and it being a conference game, things like that. Plus the logistics in terms of travel, is awful.
Yeah.
You're now telling me we have Big Ten matchup Oregon at Rutgers? That's horrendous.
Yeah, that is terrible. And something else that no one is talking about is that cable TV is on hospice. Satellite TV is declining in subscriptions and revenue. Look at what happened to what used to be Fox Sports Midwest, and then it was Bally Sports Midwest, and you know, now it's Consolidated Waste Management Network. I don't know, you know, I think it's DraftKings. I know it's some gambling site, but I mean, if we're going to rely on sports books to support broadcast networks, there has to be a better way to make sense of this, you know. And it is all, of course, driven by the almighty dollar. But you know, we're Americans. We're smart enough to figure out how to make everything fair and still keep it wealthy. I have faith in us. I think we can do that.
Sounds great. Hey, and speaking of border wars and college football, the Missouri Tigers got a pretty legit bowl game in, you know, another take of the border war. They will be taking on the Iowa Hawkeyes in the Music City Bowl later on this month.
Hooray! It's an exhibition game. It doesn't mean a thing.
I've just got to remind myself that I can't fall asleep because I'm watching Iowa try to move the football. No disrespect, because they do have a tremendous running game. It's typical Iowa. They don't believe in the forward pass. And play defense, great special teams. They probably got white cornerbacks. I still think we win. I still think we win.
Yes, this is why the SEC destroys Big Ten teams, because you know Big Ten. I mean, it's that old Woody Hayes, Ohio State. You know, 5 yards in a cloud of dust, matriculate the ball down the field. That old way, you know, and SEC plays Madden football. You know, SEC.
They do now.
Yeah, SEC is playing Randy Moss, Justin Jefferson type of football, just chucking that ball downfield. And that's what Mizzou can do. No, Luther Burden III is not playing. He's going on to make some team very happy in the NFL. But as far as I can tell, Theo Weiss Jr. is going to play for Mizzou. And Brady Cook is definitely going to play. He'll have a month to get back to full health. And I really like Mizzou's chances with a healthy quarterback and a healthy receiving court. You know, they really didn't rely on Burden all that much toward the end of the season. He got his touches, but he wasn't like the only guy that they had to throw to. So I agree with you. I think it's probably a close game up until the end, and then I think Mizzou just has way more talent on the offensive side of the ball. And if they can stop the run, you know, Iowa doesn't really have much of a chance trying to pass the ball. And so if Mizzou can get up early, I think that they'll be able to take home whatever trophy they're offering for the
in the Music City Bowl in Nashville, the only time you'll see a sellout crowd with a pulse in Nissan Stadium in 2024. My preferred matchup, I was really wanting to see Mizzou play Illinois and, you know, reignite that bragging rights rivalry just for one time around, because Brett Bielema and Illinois have had an excellent year. They're basically built like Wisconsin, but they do throw the ball pretty dang well with Luke Altmyer. I would have loved to have gotten that matchup. I wouldn't have minded seeing Mizzou play Deion.
That's what I was hoping. Yeah, I was hoping for a match against Colorado in the Las Vegas Bowl. That would have been fun.
It would have been. I just don't believe the Las Vegas Bowl is an SEC-affiliated game, which is weird how that turned out, because now you got two Big 12 schools playing each other in it.
Yeah, that's true. But I think when they were looking at it, I think the folks in Nashville were saying, we can get a lot more people in here from Missouri and Iowa than any other place. And
they probably need the revenue on the account of the Titans driving people away. There's no good pro sports because the Nashville Predators are garbage this year. So yeah. There's nothing to watch in Nashville.
That's true. But I'll tell you what, having been to Nissan Stadium, it's a great venue. I'm not sure what the need to build a new stadium is. Nissan Stadium is still a perfectly wonderful place to see a football game. I'll be probably watching from the comfort of my recliner in the basement, but definitely going to watch Mizzou take on the Iowa Hawkeyes. I have a lot of friends from Mizzou who have gone on to lives and careers in Iowa, so there's going to be a lot of interest in that game.
Agreed, and I think that just about wraps our show up for this week. Coming up next week, we are going to be talking about some holiday tournaments. We are going to preview the Lady Royals Christmas Classic that starts a week from Saturday. We should also have the seeds for the Bloomfield Christmas Tournament, so we're going to talk a little bit about that. We've got a lot of fun stuff coming up. May talk a little bit about the Popper Bluff Showdown. That's always a great tournament to watch, and it's going to be a fun show. We're also hoping to have some really cool guests on in the coming weeks. Been talking about having former Three Rivers Raiders standout Lane Ballew, who is now a successful coach at Gulf Coast State College down in Florida, hoping to have him on soon. Would like to get some others on, and it's going to be a fun ride.
And if you're listening to this podcast, if you're not already following us on Facebook, we are under the Mike and Mark Sports Show. We're going to have to update that fan site on Facebook. But if you're on Facebook, just look for the Mike and Mark Sports Show, and you'll see a picture of me and Mike and Kyle from about, 27 years ago now?
Only about 14.
I was really skinny and malnourished then.
I was thinner too.
But follow us. Just go ahead and like that page on Facebook. And once you do that, if you want to send in a question for us to talk about here on the Sports Desk, you can send us a message. You can make a post with a question or send us a private message on there. All kinds of ways to contact us, and we'll be continuing to expand our social media presence and give you more opportunities to follow us online.
That's right. And wrapping it up, I'm Mike Bueller.
I'm Mark Sanders.
This is Kyle Roberts.
And you have been listening to the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle.